Welcome to Busy Gamer Podcast 61. We publish BusyGamerNews.com, a gaming site for people too busy for gaming sites. And this podcast offers highlights from our site's reviews and feature articles, short enough to enjoy during even the shortest commutes. If you want the week's game releases, comprehensive DLC summaries, and our latest giveaways, visit BusyGamerNews.com. In the podcast, we'll share just our latest gaming adventures in audio form as often as we can.
This episode features the music of Plants vs. Zombies, a report from PAX East by former Irrational Games community manager Colin Moore, and Pikachu fans' six-month report on his first MMO, LEGO Universe.
If you play casual games at all, you've no doubt played PopCap's breakout tower defense hit, Plants vs. Zombies. Probably on more than one platform, so Laura Shigahara's excellent music should sound pretty familiar.
And if you beat the game, or click a lot of links on Twitter, you've heard PVZ's funny yet catchy pop song finale.
That song is available for free download from the PopCap website, but the full album with 29 tracks will set you back only about $4 from Laura's Bandcamp storefront. And you'll get the Japanese version of Zombies on Your Lawn with her dad filling in for PVZ creator George Fan on the zombie parts.
But apart from this song, the soundtrack isn't about vocals. It's about the quirky score, sometimes moody, other times deriving your enjoyment of the insane action.
Our household favorite is Ultimate Battle, which is really great to listen to while driving, or, how I first enjoyed it, on a choppy ferry ride to Victoria, BC.
Old Pikachu fan is learning to play the piano, and he just loves the music, which he demanded we add to his first iPod late last year.
I like the Plants vs. Zombies music because, I don't know, I'm just a big fan of music. It also reminds me of the game.
He's really looking forward to the day that he can tap out some of the tunes from the sheet music we downloaded from Laura's blog.
He's still working on the foundational basics of the piano, but hopes to eventually learn the notes of some of his favorite tracks, such as the melodic Loon Boon.
And the complex, high-energy chords of Brainiac Maniac.
We've taken to mixing in Plants vs. Zombies tracks with our other favorite music, faded together in short snippets using the My DJ app for iPhone. The results are often highly entertaining, especially when Crazy Dave pops up in between a pair of unrelated rock songs.
The soundtrack album delivers two versions of each song, the original in-game version, and some new arrangements, including this faster-paced remix of Watery Graves.
links to Laura Sugihara's Bandcamp site and blog in our show notes.
Colin Moore is a game industry veteran, most recently known for his work as community manager for Irrational Games, the makers of the BioShock series. We met him after PAX Prime last year, and he agreed to cover PAX East for us. Here's what he found during his triumphant return to Boston.
One of the games that had probably one of the bigger booths at PAX was Duke Nukem Forever, and they had this extremely elegant booth that was kind of set up like a Las Vegas kind of casino. It had a lot of chandeliers, and they had a king's seat you could stand in and get your picture taken with the Duke booth babes. But the actual game itself was just very straightforward. It was very much Duke Nukem, which it was actually really interesting to see a lot of people react to it, whereas a lot of people of older, I mean, they remember Duke Nukem back in the old days, but a lot of the people who are playing it now, who were raised on Halo and raised on those games now, they see it as a Serious Sam knockoff, which is hilarious because Serious Sam was a knockoff of Duke in terms of its very testosterone-driven explosions everywhere, almost directed like Michael Bay to a certain degree, of just everything's over the top. So it was funny watching these 20-somethings play the game and stuff, and they would just be like, man, Duke Nukem, it seems a lot like Serious Sam, or Serious Sam does it better. I heard that a couple times from people. And Duke has, it's very satirical in its kind of viewpoint in gaming now, with a lot of in-jokes about itself. It's very much in line with Team America. They have a part where you can drive in a Jeep and stuff, and I'm just waiting for it to, like, you bust through a wall and you just hear, like, America! But yeah, it's very much in that kind of just, like, testosterone, like, overdriven kind of mentality, which it's, I mean, when you play it, you can't help but laugh to a certain degree because it is so tongue-in-cheek. But yeah, it would be interesting to see how well that game does and see what, when it actually comes out, how people respond to it.
And not one for the kids.
Not one for the kids at all. No, I would say in terms of crude level, it's probably about an 11.
Right? And was it out on display where people could see it this time?
Because of the subject matter, you had to go in. Some of the things in Duke are really, really offensive. It takes tastelessness to a whole nother level. If you weren't 18, you couldn't get into the booth. The Darkness booth was this wonderful box with, like, heavy vinyl plastic, like a meat locker, cut. But they didn't air it out, so if you were in there long enough, you would start to get, like, breathe heavy plastic fumes. And, I mean, the game was very interesting, and the game itself, Digital Extreme, is doing a really good job with the IP and stuff. But it made playing the demo kind of difficult. They're doing this neat, like a cel-shaded outline, but I wasn't sure at first if that was from the fumes or if it was from, like, playing the game. But yeah, I had to duck my head out of that one pretty quick because I was starting to get queasy in there.
How'd it look?
It looks actually really good. I mean, the people who did the first game aren't working on it, and so they handed it off to a new developer, Digital Extreme, who made, like, Dark Sector and some other games. And so they're using different technology and things like that, but visually it looks really cool and really interesting. It has a Borderland effect to it. They've given it, I don't want to say it's cel-shaded, but they have slight hints of outlines on characters. And how the palette of the characters, how it's not photorealistic. And being a comic book game, like it's the Darkness of the comic book, it gives this really interesting look to it. And all the things that you would like about the Darkness from the first one, the gunplay is all still there. And it's probably more violent than the first one. During the demo, you get pulled into this situation, and your powers take over, so the demon arms pretty much pop out of you at some point, and they just, like, tear people apart and stuff. So actually, one of the games I actually had a blast playing was Mortal Kombat. I mean, I was one of those persons, I mean, played Mortal Kombat when I was in the arcades and stuff, and it was the novelty of beating someone up was always there, I mean, because I was 13 or something at the time. It was, they just made Mortal Kombat like the same old Mortal Kombat with really cool graphics now, and it's like the controls were super tight and the frame rate is super fast and the graphics are gorgeous. And the things that they're doing, they have this mechanic where you can do a special move and it will actually like zoom into the body part you're punching, and you'll see like a skeleton silhouette and watch like bones break and stuff. It was one of those games that you can just kind of like pick up, play, like beat some people up, and very fun just to kind of like let some aggression out, I guess, if you will, for a little bit. So tower defense has become the new game mode to try to get into other type of genres. So either be first person or third person or whatnot, with the success of something like Plants vs. Zombies. So the people are trying to take that type of mechanic and put it into different game modes or into different genres. And so Orcs Must Die takes the premise of a tower defense and puts you in this kind of knight character. And pretty much orcs are busting in your castle and you need to keep them away from this portal on the other side of this castle. And the thing that makes it really interesting is very quick and fast paced. So when you pick it up, it plays like an action game. You have a crossbow and you have a sword and stuff, and you can just walk up and kill them. And every time you kill them, you're given money, you're given loot to be able to buy traps. So they come in waves. So after the first wave, you have time to be able to set traps. And so you can set like a pressure spike. So you can set it on the ground. If one orc stand on it, it shoots spikes up in the air and they impale themselves and whatnot. And the more that you kill, the more points you get. Or the place where it gets really exciting is you can start to combo up traps. So one of the things they have is they have a springboard trap with when they stand on it, they get thrown in the air. So you can make it so you can throw them in the air and they land in the moat and they die in the moat and stuff. But then you can do crazy things where you can put a springboard on the ground and then put like a spike wall on the wall. So they get launched into the spikes. And the more traps you set and the more traps that they interact with, there's a multiplier. So the more kind of twisted ways to like manipulate these characters within the world, the more points you get. So you're kind of created of making these kind of death traps.
It's kind of like Spy versus Spy, where you're trying to set these different...
Yeah, it's Spy versus Spy. A lot of people are comparing it to a PlayStation game called Deception back in the day, where you lead a character through these very intricate traps. Robot's doing a really good job with it. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Pretty easy game to pick up.
Very easy game to pick up. They were in the process of changing the UI a little bit to make it a little bit more accessible, but it was very much in line with at least what they had on the show floor. Was it's similar to WoW, where it's like, okay, you press a button to bring your powers up, you click on, okay, I want this trap, you just click on the icon for it, and then you get a like kind of a silhouette thing on the ground, like any kind of like building type of game. You can rotate it to directions you want and whatnot. This is really well, I mean, it's very polished. I was in the middle of playing it and having a really good time and stuff, and one of the developers was giving it a demo right next to me, and I can only overhear him say, it's be like, yeah, we're really happy with where we are. We've only been working on it for 7 months. And someone who's worked in games before to see something that polished or at least presentable in that stage and be comfortable enough to have it in front of fans, I was very impressed of how they were able to take a concept like that and just rapidly deploy it and make it playable and make it fun.
Were there any games that surprised you, good or bad, when you were there?
There were a lot of games that really surprised me in terms of just their pure enjoyment. So there's one game on Xbox Live Arcade called Fez, which is your typical platformer, has this very charming 8-bit like aesthetic. Even though it looks 2D, the world is actually in 3D. So it's a pseudo-platform puzzle game where you can walk around and you see a ledge. In order to get past the ledge, you rotate the entire world. And the whole job is to pretty much find the star in the level.
So it's a little like Echo Chrome.
It's a lot like Echo Chrome to a certain degree. It's one of those games where once you get your hands on it, you play it, you can't help but smile because, one, it's just very charming, it's very friendly, and it's very... For someone who grew up playing Super Mario Brothers, it's very nostalgic and done with, like, current technology and current design mentality. So it was very, it was a very fun game to play. And it was cool to see a lot of people trying different things.
Did you see the Gunstringer?
I took a look at Gunstringer. I watched some people play it. For being a Kinect game, it actually did some really interesting things with the puppeteering and the actual gunplay of it. They need some tweaking to make everything right, which, I mean, with a Kinect game, when you're dealing with the human body and stuff, to get that kind of gameplay right, they just need a little bit more time for it to cook. But conceptually, it was really cool, and graphically, it was really neat. It had a very interesting charm, which Twisted Pixel does really well.
I remember when I heard about it, the first thing I thought of was when Sony was making fun of the Kinect going, what are you going to do? Go, pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're pulling it off. Like, hey, this is going to make pew, pew, pew fun.
It was pretty entertaining to watch people play. Even the problems that they were having is they were having problems with it picking up. in time. But I think it was more of the demo kind of space that they were in. You could tell when people would play it and it would work and they were using the marionette system and the kind of like gunslinger mechanics that it was very entertaining. It was very fun. It was probably one of the better Kinect games that was there. There wasn't too many.
I was curious about Trench. It's Double Fine, right?
Yeah, Trench is interesting. It's a new Xbox Live Arcade game where you have this almost robotic trench machine that you can deck out. One way to describe it is Sony had this game years ago called Armored Core, which is just a mech game where you can class out your mech and give it bigger guns and give it armor and stuff like that. And Trench is similar in terms of you have this machine that you pilot and you can go around and you blow stuff up. But then at the end of each round, you can modify it by giving it bigger armor, giving it treads, or making it taller. It has that kind of Double Fine twist on everything. The demo, when you play it for the first time, you get into what you think is like a World War II, what like the Nazis had with the concrete kind of like trench booths. Yeah, bunker or something. You get into this bunker and next thing you know, it like transforms into this robot and it just comes out of the ground and you're just like, okay, this is not really what I was expecting at all. There's a lot of explosion. It's very action-oriented. But it has that Double Fine twist in terms of humor, in terms of just visual aesthetic.
Were there any games that you felt disappointed when you saw them?
There wasn't anything that really disappointed me. There were some games that I would see them and that just nothing sparked my interest. Like Red Faction Armageddon was just very much, I walked by it and took a look at it and it didn't do anything for me. They're going in a much more of a direction of like Dead Space. Which, I mean, I love Dead Space, but it just seemed weird to take a game that was about destruction and all these cool things and move it into more scary and aliens and things like that. So it seemed really weird, even though they had this gigantic, awesome robot you could get your picture taken with. Homefront was another game that you would just play and you'd be like, oh, it's Call of Duty with Red Dawn. Like, it didn't have anything to resonate, at least with me personally. There was some chatter that Star Wars Old Republic wasn't hitting it with a lot of people there. It was playable, but the lines were just so long that, it was like a myth to hear people who got to play it. Nintendo 3DS was kind of in the same boat. A lot of people were really excited to get their hands on it finally, because they really haven't had it available, like, to be able to play it. But then when a lot of people did, it was very kind of polarizing. A lot of people were just like, it's amazing. A lot of people were just like, eh, the DS is enough for me. Or a lot of people were also excited for PSP 2 at that point, because they're just like, okay, this isn't enough. There was one game that, it was in the EA's kind of space, called Warp. It's a Xbox Live Arcade game, where you play pretty much this person who is being used as a science guinea pig, and you're pretty much turned into, like, an electric bolt or some form of energy. The perspective is kind of, like, top-down, so you can see every room around you. What you do is, if you come across a door, you press a button and you warp to the other side. And it turns into this cool kind of puzzle mechanic where you have to, like, warp into a room that has a barrel and knock it down to, like, start the power to open up another door. And the graphics were really interesting, and it was just one of those fun games to pick up. It was really easy and fun to play. Insane Twisted Shadow Planet was actually really cool. And it's a company based in Seattle here. It's a very small company. And if you look at it, it looks like your typical kind of like R-type shooter. But the actual mechanics of it are very much in line with like Metroid or Castlevania, where you can go through this path and you kill something and you like pick up an object and you backtrack and you're in this kind of UFO machine and you fly around and stuff. And its art style, it's very like graphic novel, heavy line base, really, really bold colors and very different ways, and very interesting of what they're doing with that. And Fire Pro Wrestling was actually really entertaining. Being someone who grew up with pro wrestling on the NES, of just like, all right, I'm going to press my buttons and I'm going to do a body slam and stuff. Well, they took a lot of these kind of like old mechanics and Xbox is coming out with Fire Pro Wrestling, which they use the avatars for. Which is really cool, because I don't play a lot of games that involve the avatars. But you can get your avatar, and you can get, like, a Mexican, like, wrestling mask, and go fight other people with your avatar. And it was just that kind of very easy pick-up-and-play, have a good time. It has a lot of those kind of, like, very old mechanics that I kind of really like.
If you want to keep up with Colin's exploits, follow Shiny Idol on Twitter. You are like
in by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture a match in your inventory.
Our 8-year-old Pikachu fan reviewed LEGO Universe, his first MMO, shortly after it came out last year.
This is fighting as it never was before. Oh, great. Yes, this is looking good. I mean good, not good.
Now, 6 months in, he has an update on the game, which he put down for a while to play some other games, most notably Plants vs. Zombies on the DS, but now he's back to playing it nearly every weekend.
I've been playing LEGO Universe for about, a year and a half. A year? For 6 months. By the way, I finished this mission, and now I got to something so cool. I can do LEGO Ninja Go, which always kills me. Ugh. LEGO Ninja Go! LEGO Ninja Go is basically a completely different topic. You play as a ninja, and you use magic to defeat enemies. This is a crossover. Two LEGO games smashed into one. I stopped playing it for about a month. Why? Because I had a whole bunch of other stuff that I wanted to play and read. I went back because my parents told me to. Because why pay for it if you're not gonna play it? The truth is, I did not regret my parents' advice.
We split the cost of the game with him, so he has some stake in it. In particular, whether to keep up with the $10 monthly subscription fee. So far, he hasn't wavered in his desire to keep going back to the land of virtual interlocking bricks.
On Twitter, we encourage you to follow Game Watcher and Girl Got Game. That's GRRL Got Game. We often tweet news that isn't big enough to deserve an entry on the site, or has a very limited shelf life. We also have a BGN community Twitter list. If you're not on it and want to be, just send GameWatcher an @reply.
We also encourage you to join the Busy Gamers Facebook group and our Busy Gamer News Facebook fan page.
If you use Stitcher Radio, search for Busy Gamer and favorite us there. And if you enjoy the podcast, please like us there too. We're also on Zune Marketplace, and we'd love it if you rate and review us on iTunes.
Some of the music in this podcast came from Mevio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mevio.com. You can find details and links for these and other songs at busygamernews.com, WAC Podcast.
There is Zombie Gaia Dekika. You guessed it, the same song in another language. What was the language? It's in Japanese.